some brackets. And we also have six first class constraints, so we have zero-dimensional physical phase space. So now we can work on the direct quantization. The first step is to find a good basic variable or functions, and we calculate each for some bracket. And we won't find a good meaning that we hopefully they form an algebra, hopefully they transform in a simple transform under each transformation in a simple way. If we find that, then we can also smear the constraint so that we don't have delta function. We also don't have another integration. To do that, we just need to smear the configuration over a k-dimensional hypersurface, and also smear its conjugate function over the d minus k-dimensional hypersurface. Here, the d is the dimension of the space. When we get this, we can quantize the variable into operator, and also can change the Poisson bracket into a commutator. Also, we can quantize the constraint in the operator. After we find the constraint, then we will act on the state, then we will have a physical Hilbert space. Then we can find the direct observable. So yesterday, we did half of the first step. We want to find good basic variable. What basic variable do we have? One is speed condition. Is it good? It's not. because under gauge transformation, it transforms in this funny way. Well, it has two terms. The first term is the speed condition itself. Another term is the derivative. So we can imagine that if we quantize it, it may contain a multiple operator, also a derivative operator. It's not simple, so it's not good. So we want to find a function, so we don't use it directly. So we want to form a function of it, so that maybe it transforms in this way. The A is also not good in another way that we find that we know that giving me a manifold, the A is introduced when we define the covariant derivative. It means that the A actually lives in the tangent space associated to a point of the manifold. So remember that we are trying to quantize the gravity. It means that we don't want to quantize the geometry. So we also want a function, not only just A, but also a function of the geometry. Geometry may be a curve on the manifold, maybe a sphere, or maybe a hypersurface of the manifold. So this is what we want to find. And the solution of it is polynomy. So before we go to that, we review some objects named the algebra value form. It's from this funny identity. The R is the group element of the SO3 group, and the G is the group element of the SU2 group. And the T is the generator of the SU2 group. This identity can be interpreted as the vector representation of the SO3 group is equivalent to the adjoint representation of the SU2 group. So if we plug vector with an inner indices to the left, then and also use the unitary property of the matrix R, then we have the equation on the right hand side. So it inspires us to define to combine a vector with inner index with the generator of the Lie algebra together to combine this so-called Lie algebra value object. So we have this kind of objects. We have two examples. One is the conjugated momentum, one is the curvature. We also know that the connection is not this Lie algebra value form, because it's transformed in this one way. So assume that we have a vector. We have a vector on a manifold. We associate it with the generator of the Lie algebra. Then we find this Lie algebra value forms. And we know that it transforms in this way. So we know that a vector can be parallel transported to another vector on another point of manifold. So we can imagine, we can encode this parallel transportation as the gauge transformation. So so we define our parallel transportation in this way. Here, this H of S is called holonomy, and it's a group element of the S2 group. Also, we remember that the V, the vector, or the this form should transform in the adjoint representation. It means that at zero point, it transforms in this way, and S point, it transforms in this way. If we plug in the definition of the parallel transportation, we find that the holonomy should transform in this way. And also, we find how holonomy transform. We also need to know what holonomy is. So demanding this holonomy should mean parallel transportation. It should satisfy the parallel transportation transport equation, which is like this. If we plug the definition for this VS, then we can have this funny equation, which means this kind of differential equation. We solve this differential equation, we find the holonomy. And this is just infinitesimal, this is for infinitesimal S. So we iterate it, and then we solve the holonomy is in this form. So that's what we did. Just a conclusion, did we find a good basic variable? Yes, because holonomy is a function of A, and also gamma. Gamma is a curve on the manifold. It's a geometry. And also it transforms in this good way, in a simple way. So we're done. So I don't know what's next. Thanks.
Okay, so this was even more than a summary. You add the calculation and
yeah, to show the a gauge transformation of the holonomy. I did not do that explicitly yesterday, so you add that. That's good. So now I need light. So you're saying that I can use it here. All on. Perfect. So where are we? So I think you summarized this quite well. So indeed, we are trying to do the first step of the Dirac in the Dirac program. And before even defining, so the first step would be to define the kinematical Hilbert space and turning the configuration variable and conjugated variable as operator and defining, so of course, the inner product. So this is what we want to define. And for that, the question are, what are the good basic variables that we're going to use? So I think Turin really explained very well what was the motivation of going to. So our starting point is, of course, the connection. And the densitized triad. And so one of the issues is for that the Poisson. So here, if you look at the Poisson brackets, you have some delta. So of course, if we can regularize this now to avoid this delta function, and instead of working with distribution, work directly with function to get nice operators, this is great. So this is the first motivation. This is the motivation to smear this variable. Okay, and then of course another motivation is that. So we're going to define phase space function in such a way that here you don't have any delta or any integration. And also in such a way that this is a simple form, so meaning that this forms an algebra as So f and g here are function of e and a, and we want this. And we also want that they transform simply under gauge transformation. And so indeed, yesterday we applied this recipe of smearing a variable, the connection, the configuration variable, and we end up now with holonomy. And here, what is going to be the result? So what are we going to get here? Is that indeed now, so you see that holonomy are defined. So here, what we get is holonomies, which are a function of a connection, and they are defined on a graph, on a curve. And the second one is going to give what we call fluxes. And I'm going to define them in a moment. But maybe before that, I just want to give you I want to give you a bit the big picture, what we are trying to do. And then I'm going to give additional property of the holonomies, which are really important and which make that things are easy here. So we started with these variables, which are continuous variables. Okay? And now to go to the canonical Hilbert space, so even before being quantum, we are doing this change of variable. So these are, let's mention that they are continuous by saying that, of course, they depend on x. So we have this continuous variable, which are going to be replaced here by h of e, if e here is just, instead of gamma, I'm talking about the edge of a graph. And e of e, which is going to be the flux. And this variable, as you have seen, the holonomy is living, so is defined with a curve or with the edge. So when you only have 2 points, of course, that you want to relate, you only have one curve. But then this thing is that we're going to consider different points. So we are going to have several points, and we are going to end up with objects which are graphs. Okay, so this is a graph. So at this stage, you see that, yeah.
If you give me 2 points, I have a lot of way to travel from one to the other.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Okay, but what is important is that you can, so what is going to be important, so, and it's already what I mentioned before, is, so in general relativity, what is important is really relation among dynamical variables, okay? And so here, why a graph is going to be interesting is because it's going to give you a relation between different points, okay? So and it's going to tell you who is next to who, but of course, you have some, this, and this is going to be why this is not so important. In fact, it's because we have the diffeo symmetry, so the fact that you can deform your graph into another is not going to be to play your role. But you're right that you don't have one line relating two different points, okay? But at the end, so we just consider one graph, okay? And so you see that from going from here to here, so this is still classical, but here now you have a kind of discrete picture. And if you focus only on one graph, in fact, you get the truncature of your theory. And here, whereas you have an infinite number of degrees of freedom, okay, because it's not only, so when you're in, but it's what I said yesterday, indeed, in your phase space, you have 12 degrees of freedom times infinity, of course, because it's for each x is like, it's, so x is infinity. So it's more, so here it's a continuous theory. So it's you have an infinite number of degrees of freedom, whereas here we're going to truncate that and have a finite number of degrees of freedom. But of course, so then, in fact, we can still work at this level, even at the discrete level, at the classical level, and then we go to the quantum level. So historically, these two steps were more or less done together. There was not really interest of this object at the classical level, but recently some work has been done to show that it's quite already interesting to look at discrete geometry, even at the classical level, and to see what we can say. It's more a kind of semi-classical approximation of what you would get here. And so here, what we're going to obtain today is the holonomy flux algebra And what we're going to first quantize is really quantize even one edge, okay? So we're going to first, and then one graph. So this means that we're going to get an Hilbert space. The Kinder-Hilbert space is going to be associated to one given graph. And this is what we're going to call the spin network Hilbert space. So spin network is really just a graph with some decoration, which are the quantum decoration coming from this. But of course, you see that here, as I said, it's a truncature of the initial theory. We don't have all the degrees of freedom. So this is not the end of the story, even if for us, we are mainly going to work on this aspect, because you can already see that geometry has geometrical operator of discrete spectrum. But of course, if you want to go to the full theory, then you need to go to the continuous kinematical Hilbert space. And we're not going to talk so much about this step, because it's a bit technical, and take what we call a projective limit. So I will just come back to explain what is that of. So these are the graph Hilbert space. So you're going to So why am I mentioning that? First, it's because, so what we're going to do today is first define the flux variable, check that indeed the flux with the holonomy forms an algebra. And we're going to show also that the way this, the motivation, the way this flux variable is defined is to get that it transforms simply under gauge transformation. So we're really going to have this in mind. Once we will have everything, then we can go to define what is the kinematical Hilbert space. So this will be now our configuration variable. This is going to be the momentum, the conjugated momentum. So we're going to define now the associated Hilbert space associated to a given graph, or even first to a given edge, because it's quite simple. And we won't take this limit. But what I want to say is that at some point, we're going to work with geometric operator. And I'm going to show you that geometric operator in the context of gravity have a discrete spectrum. So just what I want to emphasize here is that I don't want you to get confused that when we say that the picture of loop quantum gravity is that space is discrete, it's formed by atom of space, okay? The discreteness does not come from that you have graph here, and that because in fact the complete kinematical Hilbert space is continuous, okay? If you really go there, and in this continuous kinematical Hilbert space, you could check that indeed you can still define a geometrical operator. And what we mean when we say that loop quantum gravity predicts that space is formed by atom of space, it's discrete, this means that the geometrical operator have a discrete spectrum, okay? So there are two different aspects. It's not because we have introduced this graph that we say that the theory is discrete, because the full kinematical Hilbert space is continuous, okay? It's not a discrete like this one. And what makes that space is discrete is really the result that kinematical geometrical operator have a discrete spectrum, okay? So this is just what I wanted to emphasize now. So now let me just give you, before defining these fluxes, I just want to finish on the holonomy. And holonomy. This is N. Yeah, okay. And just give two important properties. So first, you should have checked that in the tutorial yesterday that this object is independent of the parametrization. Or at least you have shown that for a closed curve of your edge here, or your curve. And also we can say that H is, the holonomy is a representation of the groupoid of oriented paths. So what do I mean here? This means that the holonomy, so we get a representation of oriented paths, because you see that here I didn't say very explicitly, but when we were doing the parallel transport, of course, we were choosing a parametrization where we were saying here it's gamma of S, and here you have S equals 0, and maybe S equals 1, so you introduce a kind of orientation of your path. So you need to choose. And so what do I mean here? Here I mean that now, of course, if you define the holonomy for a single point, it's going to be the identity. Okay? So if your curve or your edge just finally is just a single point, then this is the identity. And the other important thing is that now if I give you two oriented paths in such a way that the endpoint of the first one is the starting point of the second one. Okay, so this is E2, then you can define that E is you can define that this is just the path E, okay, in a very natural way. And then this means that here you have H of E of A is just the product of and now if you change orientation, so if my path E is oriented this way and now I look at the path with the reverse orientation, then this is I can call it inverse of E. And then you just have that H of defined for E minus 1 is just H of E minus 1.
Just the transformation H of E is equal to the product is the same as the composition or is different?
Yeah, so here it's a product of SU2 matrices. Okay? So you just. And yeah, so here it's just SU2 group element. So you just go from one point to the other by using this one, and then this is just a matrix multiplication. Okay. So this is to conclude the first part of here. So now we have, instead of working with connection, we're going to work with holonomies. And as Shirin recalled it, it's a very natural function of A first. It has a nice geometrical interpretation. Okay, it's to go to the parallel transport. And it has a simple behavior under gauge transformation. So of course, we still need to check that this is going to form a nice algebra, but we first need to define what is the flux. Okay, so let's move. Any question? Yeah.
So in the composition there that you have there of the holonomy, wouldn't it be first, like, to the right HE1?
Yeah, so then it's, so this is, maybe the way I defined the holonomy yesterday. Yes, so you always have this kind of convention that you choose, and then you have to stand to the same convention all the time, because the multiplication, so here you're telling me that if I'm doing first E1, this means that E1 should be here, in the way I defined it yesterday.
But the holonomy is E to the integral of A. Integral is from 0
yeah.
to S.
And so I think it's the right way. So maybe it's.
Yeah, exactly. But that's why I would say if I would put to the right.
I think it's.
We have the composition V is equal to H, V, H minus 1. So if we touch this from the left with a V, the V is going to be touched by the 2 first, which shouldn't be this like this. See what I mean?
Yeah. So you're saying if now I'm taking my V0 here, then I get V prime here and V second here. So I want that H of E acting on V0 give me V second,
yeah.
And this can be decomposed into Yeah, so it seems that. Okay, so I need to, yeah, maybe. Well, you have a product rule, and I got. So maybe you're right here. I'm surprised. Okay, so let's say that maybe you're right. So let's put this like this, and I will check. Maybe I'm just. It seems that. Okay.
So are you swapping the numbers, or you're putting one inside the other?
No, it's really a product here. Okay? So this means that you're going to act on V0 with, and you want to act with V0 with H of E1. So in this sense, it's so that you're getting, and you, and then H of E2. So, no, because we have the adjoint. Okay, I will check. I cannot think on the blackboard now. I don't want to spend 5 minutes. Maybe this is still correct. I still need to. Okay, sorry about that. But good point. Oh, I'm getting. Okay, so let's now introduce the flux variable. So again, Sharon Rim-Recall asked that what is the recipe here? So we first, when we're smearing the function, if we want that at the end, this Poisson bracket with the new function doesn't have any delta function and also doesn't have any integration. The recipe to do that is to integrate, to smear the connection on, if we smear the connection of a k-dimensional surface object, then the conjugated variable is going to be smeared over a d minus k, and in our case, so k is equal to 1, d is equal to 2, so we get again 1. Okay, so here the fluxes are going to be again smeared along a curl, and the way we are going to do that, so you know that from smearing H, okay, from smearing the connection, we have, let's say that now we build our connection all along a curve gamma. Then I'm going to introduce a dual curve, okay? So maybe I should do the same. And so I'm going to give you the formula of this flux, and then I'm going to explain why we're doing these choices and to motivate. So we're going to integrate over the dual curve, okay? And I'm going to use the parallel transport from gamma s to gamma zero here. So this is gamma zero. So here, this is labeled by S, and I'm going to say that this one is labeled by S prime, parameterized by S prime. And then I'm going to use the triad, but it's a Lie-valued object here. So I'm going to explain again what is that. At the point, then I need to contract with the tangent vector along this curve. And here, let me just remind you that EA is just, so it's a Lie-valued object. So this means that I'm considering this object. And now we want to relate that with the densitized triad because it's what we have here. So what is this object is just okay, so what does it mean here? This means that I'm looking at, so this object is sitting at the point gamma star of s. And then I'm using so this one here, OK? And then what I'm using is, in fact, this object is going to be defined as sitting at gamma 0. So you choose the same starting point for the holonomy and your flux variable. So why do you want that? It's just because you will see that we want to have that the gauge transformation for H and for E are going to be related in a nice way. So this is why we choose to have this object, in fact, living here. So these two connections here, so this is just defining the parallel transport. From the point on, so which is on the dual curl, and so using here, of course, it's by action by adjoint action, so it's you use. This is just, these two connections here are just to parallel transport this object to the point gamma zero. Okay, so I'm here and I'm going to parallel transport everything here. And of course, I'm integrating over all the points on this dual curve. So I'm doing that for any vector living on this dual curve. And so why are we introduce this parallel transport here? So the insertion of the holonomy here is to ensure that the local transformation behavior under internal rotation is fine. Okay, so it's to ensure a local because if you don't internal rotation, and so I'm not going to prove it, but here now E gamma is going to be under gauge transformation, is just going to transform as locally and again, the fact that we choose here, because we could also all parallel transport it to the origin, for example, of this graph. But then the fact that now the holonomy H and the conjugated variable E are defined at the same origin here is going to make that the transformation of both objects are nicely related. Okay, so when we deal with that. Okay. And so here there are some, so in fact, why do we say now that E is in fact associated to gamma and not gamma star? It's just because, so we have a one-to-one correspondence. So once I give you an edge of a graph, okay, anything, we're going to say that there is one dual edge associated to this, okay? And this is because we are on a 2D surface. So here, if I give you a graph, I can, of course, here draw the dual graph, which is going to be something like this. And so what you, and of course, in 3D, this would be different. When I give you a graph, each edge is going then to be dual to a surface, OK? But so you really have a one-to-one correspondence between what I draw here in yellow, which is the dual graph, and the graph. So really, when you define your flux, you can really say that it's associated to one given edge or one given curve. And of course, then you're going to integrate over this. And here, the way we choose, I have drawn that here, is just by convention. So what I have chosen here is that, of course, the only thing you want is that the crossing is transversal, OK? Then we can choose an orientation for this crossing. So here I have chosen that it's positively oriented. And then to do calculation, you can even choose, for example, that the crossing will happen when s is equal to 1/2 and s prime is equal to 1/2. But then doing all the calculation you want, you can always show that this is independent of this choice. So it's just, again, it's what we have shown for the holonomy. The holonomy is independent of the parametrization of the curve. And here it's the same. Okay, it's totally independent of the parametrization you choose. So if I'm choosing a parametrization, usually it's more to do explicit calculation. And it's going to be, I'm going to choose some convention. But most of the, all the results are going to be independent of these choices. Okay?
Can you explain how you draw into a graph?
Here it just because so here it's we just have one edge, but then we're going to work our one curve, okay? And then we're going to work with graph, okay? And just what I'm telling you is that usually I'm just going to talk about the graph and I'm not going to mention the dual one because you just have a one-to-one correspondence, which is here what I draw here. So you see that you have one transversal curve associated to each of your edge of your edges of your each of edge of your graph, okay?
Yeah, but how, for example, how I know the length of these yellow lines and the angles?
Okay, so.
It's a bit naive right now.
Yeah, so right now, so at the quantum level, we're going to see that. So in fact, what is going to be this graph? This graph is just going to be a at the quantum level, at least, is going to be a combinatorics object. Okay, and just by the combinatorics. Information that you have on your graph, you're going to reconstruct your geometry. But here, of course, you could you can compute the length. Now we are at the classical level, so you could compute the length of this curve explicitly. Okay, but just what I'm saying is that right now this is for the dual one, the length of this one is not right now. It's not what is. Is not important, okay? Because what is just important is that it's a relation with respect to this one. So again, it's just going to be relational.
So you mean there is a recipe that given a graph gives exactly the dual graph?
But then, of course, but again, and also, why is that not important to know if this graph is? So if I'm doing instead of this line, then I'm crossing here, or I'm crossing here, okay? It's because, so first, if we do some explicit calculation, you're going to see that this, what is just important is that there is a crossing. Where is the crossing is usually not important. And then again, because you have the DFAO invariance, as soon as you can deform things, this is also not important, okay?
Not depend on this kind of choice.
Yeah, okay. So now, this is a Lie-valued object. Okay, so now the question is because we want to compute the Poisson bracket to check that this form an algebra, but we need to have to be able to extract a component of this. Okay, yeah, sorry.
Can you define just the positive and negative orientations in relation to the crossing?
If I can define
what the positive orientation is.
Okay, so here by positive orientation I mean so if you look at the tangent vector here, okay, and the tangent vector on this curve here, okay. What you want is that if you look now at the determinant form by these two tangent vectors, so okay, so you have two tangent vectors at this given point of the intersection. When I'm saying that the tangent vector at this tangent is oriented positively, this means that this has to be greater than zero. Okay, so this is again a choice that we're doing because it's just to at some point if you want to do explicit calculation, then you need to have this defined. But then of course it's a kind of convention. You could choose the other one. Okay, so this object is the flux, but of course again this is defined as a Lie-valued object, so how do we extract a component of that? Well, let me do this. So what we want to get is
I
So what is, if I give you any Lie-valued object, which is defined this way. Okay, so here. Where here, again, it's the SU2 generator. How can I get this object? Okay? And you can get this object because you have a kind of metric defined on the Lie algebra, which is given by the trace. If you check, so here, usually I'm going to use that explicitly. If you want to do calculation explicitly, I'm going to define this as written in terms of the Pauli matrices. Okay? And so if you want to check explicitly what is the trace of two objects here, you're going to see that indeed this is, so you have a minus 1 over 2 of delta ik. So this defines kind of a metric which is negative definite here, but it's what we're going to use to extract a component. Because now if I give you E, you can give me ER or EJ performing minus 2 the trace of E times TJ. Okay, and then just expressing that this is indeed EK, TK, then you get this component. So this is what we're going to do. So this was just in general. Okay, so we're going to use that. And now I'm going to apply this to this expression. Okay, but you see that now taking the trace, where do I have? So I'm going to rewrite this using this expression. So this is just a number. This is just a number. This is a matrix. But here, these are also matrices. Okay. So when I'm taking the trace, I'm going to get the trace of not only TJ, TK, but I'm going to get the trace with this additional rotation here. Okay, so let's write this explicitly. And then we will be able to, this is what we're going to do, the explicit calculation. I'm not sure I'm going to do explicit calculation today, but so I want to extract the component J. So I'm using TJ, and then I have the trace of TKH. And then his TK is B. Okay. Okay, so here I just really expanded that. And this object, since it's not a matrix, it can go outside. So this part and this part and contracted with this vector. And now, so from what we did yesterday, so just using what I just said before, so this means that this is the component of, so taking that plus that into account, I get that this is just exactly, so H gamma, gamma star of EB H. And then it's the component J. But using again the equivalence between the SU2 adjunct representation and the vector representation for SO3, we can rewrite this just using the matrix, the rotation matrix acting on. Okay, so from this, we can just simplify the component of BK of leaving at And then I'm left with this epsilon dA. Okay, any questions here? Yeah.
How do you get from to the H gamma gamma star EB, the inverse H, yeah.
This one?
How do they not affect the trace, the like H matrices?
So this is just a number, okay? So if you want, you can put that inside this, and this K is contracted with this one, okay? So you see that here, if I'm rewriting this with this, what I get is minus 2, the trace of Tj times something which is H Eb, which is Ebk contracted with Tk, okay? Time H. And I can call that my, if you want, E tilde. And then this is exactly the same expression that before. So this gives you the component J of E tilde, which is given by this. Okay? But this is just a number. So it can go inside the trace. And it's just, when I rewrote this, I put that outside because first this was defined in terms of just small e, so just the triad. And so you also have this number that is now. Yeah?
There's not an index a which is free in the last line.
A here?
Gamma dot star a.
Ah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, you need that for the integration. Because you integrate, you do the integration along the curve. Okay, so yeah, sorry about that. Okay, so now hopefully it's complete. I don't have any indices. Yeah, okay, good. So this is the component, and now the next step, of course, is to look at so what we want to check now, we have our basic variables. We know that both of them transform. So this I haven't proved it, but it's transformed nicely under gauge transformation, at least the rotation one. We have the same for, so now we need to check that they form an algebra. So I'm not going to do explicitly, I think, calculation because. So the first one would be to check this. So you want to consider just one component with H gamma first, maybe a matrix. And so what is important here is if you want to do explicitly the calculation, it's, so are you interested by this calculation? No, maybe not. It's just the point, it's just really near the intersection that it's going to be, you're going to have something non-trivial happening. And well, I'm not going to do it. Let me know if you're interested in doing that, and I can maybe try to make you do that during the tutorial, even if I have another idea for Thursday tutorial. But so you can do this calculation. And here, how you do that, maybe I can just explain quickly. So you have this kind of, you have gamma star, gamma. And what you're going to do is, since only this, what is happening here is important, you're going to split this holonomy, okay? You know that the holonomy is just what we have said before, can be decomposed. So if this is S is equal to 1/2, can just be decomposed at so this means that it goes from 1 to 1/2 plus epsilon over 2 H of gamma I'm using this kind of decomposition. So meaning that I'm just looking at a small part here. And so these are not going to enter at all in the definition of this Poisson bracket, and then you're just going to use that this is a very small one, so you can do a linear approximation and at the first order, and then use the Poisson bracket of because the idea, what do you know? You know the Poisson bracket of between A and E. Okay, so the idea here is really that you want to approximate this as a first order to write this is identity minus something written in terms of your connection. And of course, this is written in terms of E. And at the same point, you're going to get that a non-trivial contribution. Yeah?
Just E gamma J is a number and H gamma is an SU2 matrix. How can we commute to different
Poisson
brackets? Sorry?
Poisson bracket.
It's a Poisson bracket, it's not a commutator here. So.
Okay, same question with the Poisson bracket.
But the Poisson bracket is just.
Like what we did with the big A and the big E, it was on always like a component. Component
Y. Yeah, but it's just that. Here, so that's why you have a T coming out. It's so when you're going to expand that, because what you're going to use, either you could use the fact that, so when, for example, you have some Q and P for the Poisson bracket, so in terms of F and J, so you can go back to the definition and just say using that directly, okay? But it's not usually what you do in practice here. What we're going to use here is that you know that the only non-zero Poisson bracket is going to be this one where you write these are both just numbers, okay? And you get a delta R. They are not only numbers, they are function, okay? So you get. And but so here, what you're when you're going to expand that, you're going to get that this is something like minus identity minus an integration from so these 2 points. And indeed, here this is a matrix, but it's a matrix that can be decomposed by TL. Okay, it's just a Lie-valued algebra.
TL just came out, come out, and that's it.
Okay, it's just now you do the commutation and then you end up with a. So it's fine that you have different kind of object here in the calculus.
Sorry.
This is just proportional to this. And you can check that, of course, what would you expect from. So now if I look at. I can look at this in terms of matrix element or gamma prime. So what do you expect here for the Poisson bracket between the two holonomies? Yeah, it's going to commute, Poisson commute, because, so of course, this is just written in terms of the connection, and the connection commute with each other, okay? And then, if you want, then the next one is to compute this one. And here, so this is a good kind of exercise for you. You can use a kind of heuristic argument just using you want. So now you have this one, and you know this one. So using the Jacobi identity, using so you want to compute this one. And you can expand this using the Jacobi identity. Here, then you can rewrite this as V minus, so. H gamma. In fact, here you can just consider one gamma, because when gamma is different from the other, you can already expect that it's going to be zero. And then, so you know this one, it's going to give you something in terms of H. So here you again have something in terms of HE. So at the end, this is going to give you something in terms of just H gamma. And you have some epsilon, because here you're going to get Tj, Tk, and Tk, Tj, okay? So it's the SU2, the algebra generators. And so this just shows that this is going to give you the commutator between Tj and Tk, okay? These two terms. So this is can be rewritten in terms of epsilon kjl. TL. So here, what does it mean? This first means that this cannot be zero. And you know that h with h is zero. So this cannot be a function of h. It has to be a function of e, because e with h is going to give you a h that you want. So here, you expect that this give you is proportional to e. And you expect to get this structure constant here. So indeed, wait, so this cannot be zero. And it has to be proportional to E, and even proportional to epsilon kjl E. So here, what you get, and you can check that explicitly, is that this gives you epsilon a k l e l gamma.
H is hidden in the R.
In the definition of E.
Like the formula E that we have on the board.
Yeah. H is, yeah. Okay. It's more here if you want it R of H. Yeah. Because it's just the rotation. When I've used here, it's the rotation associated to this SU2 matrix here. Okay. So that's why you have this non-trivial then relation between E and E. Okay, it cannot be zero, because indeed it's not only written in terms of the tetrad, but it's a function of the tetrad and the connection here. Okay, so that's why when you go to this Poisson bracket is not zero. It would be only a function of the densitized triad. It would be, of course, zero. But since here you're mixing the connection and the tetrad. So you see that really our basic variable are they're in fact mixing both. Okay, so we keep A as our configuration variable, which is going to be now given by a holonomy, but the flux variable are going to mix both variable here. And so what does it mean? It means that the E here can be the representation of the Lie algebra SO3 or SU2. Okay. So, but what is the result here is that you see that this is a closed algebra. And in fact, the phase space, so now this is the phase space associated. So it's, as I already mentioned, it's a truncated theory here. We started from continuous variable. And now if we just focus on one gamma, one edge of a graph, okay, we get this variable H and E. So the holonomy and the flux is satisfying on the graph gamma, on the H gamma, this Poisson bracket. And this symplectic structure is the symplectic structure of the cotangent bundle of SU2 that we denote, which is quite well known. So here, what does it mean? So this is exactly this symplectic structure that we have here. So H is equal to zero. And this is for a given curve or a given edge of a graph, gamma. Okay, so for a given edge of a graph gamma, so if I call it E, I have the variable, the holonomy, which Poisson commute, and I have the flux variable, which is, and G, K, L, E, L. So here now I'm not using gamma anymore, I'm using E. So they form, these are our basic variables. They form a nice algebra. They transform well under gauge transformation. So, and as you can see, this is, you can already guess what we're going to do tomorrow, is that, so to each edge now, E of my graph, I have this element. And my configuration variable are going to be my SU2 group element. So I'm going now to work with function defined on SU2. Okay? This is a SU2 group element, and it's going to be my configuration variable. So tomorrow we're going to define what is the kinematical phase space associated just to one edge. Okay, kinematical. Then maybe before going to the kinematical Hilbert space of a complete graph, maybe I'm going to show you what is the length operator and show you that indeed the length operator is going to get, we can already, just for a given edge with all these variables, because so these are going to be turned into operator. So we're going to first define this as operator. Then once we have operator, we can define a geometric operator just for this edge, which is going to be a measure of the length of this edge as an operator. And we're going to show that what we get is discrete eigenvalues here. Okay. And then what we're going to go is to first the kinematical Hilbert space of the complete graph. And again, if you really want to have your continuous kinematical Hilbert space, then you have a kind of technical step, which is to take the projective limit. But we won't talk so much about it here, because to see what I want to show you, we can really work with this truncated Hilbert space. But again, remember that here you get just a number, a finite number of degrees of freedom. So it's not the full theory, but it's enough to see many aspects of the theory. And then, of course, we're going to implement the constraint on that. And these two steps should, So tomorrow I'm going at least to do this and hopefully this step. And next week we're going to implement the constraint. Okay, thanks.